Windows, Mathematics, and the Kentucky Derby by Mark Maurer.
I have been blind all my life, and most of the time I have thought that blindness held no mysteries for me. However, sometimes I have gained perspective about the subject that has truly been astonishing. When I was in high school, I walked from my home to the school grounds most days. One time, when I was proceeding to class carrying a briefcase in one hand and a braille writing machine in the other, I stepped into an open manhole and fell several feet. A policeman came to help me out of the hole. As he was assisting me in brushing off the mud, he asked me where my cane was. I responded to him by saying that I didn't need a cane, that I could get along just fine without one. I held this opinion despite the reality that I had just stepped into an open manhole. Today, I marvel at the idiocy of my own thought processes, and I wonder how many other times I have made foolish decisions without being aware that they were foolish. In my work as president of the National Federation of the Blind, I use two different offices. One of them has windows, but the other does not. My office with windows was constructed as part of the National Federation of the Blind Jernigan Institute, our new building erected to give us space to conduct innovative research and training programs. The windows are incorporated into the structure because sighted people like to look out of them, and they are impressed by the view. Sometimes the sunshine coming through these windows is intensely bright. Consequently, we have installed window coverings to diminish the intensity of the illumination. In constructing this office, we have undertaken considerable expense and much trouble to make it possible for others to enjoy the visual impression of a spectacular panorama, one that I cannot see at all. My office without windows was built deliberately without them, because most of the wall surface was planned to contain bookshelves. Dr. Kenneth Jernigan, my predecessor as president of the National Federation of the Blind, supervised the construction of the office without windows. He pointed out that windows in modern buildings are sealed. They cannot be opened to let air in or out. They exist for the one purpose of permitting sighted people to look out of them. Furthermore, the presence of windows creates disadvantages. Windows weaken the structure, permit ultraviolet rays to enter the building and affect the paint and the colorings of furniture, and make it more difficult to heat the building in the winter and to cool it in the summer. Nevertheless, sighted people like to look out the windows. Some people argue that those who have windows also have greater peace of mind than those who don't. I like windows that can be opened because I appreciate the outdoors. With the windows open, I can feel the breeze and hear the sounds of my surroundings. However, I care little for windows that cannot be opened. The windows in my office cannot be opened, but I have them because other people find them exceedingly pleasant. My office without windows is really a small library, housing one of the best privately owned collections of Braille material that exists anywhere in the world. There are no windows because the walls are lined with books. When I want solitude and seclusion, this is the ideal setting. When I need to work without interruption, the book-lined office is the place to be. Sometimes people think that blind people should not be included in events or activities because part of the experience is visual. Do blind people enjoy spectator sports, fashion shows, visits to museums, attendance at theaters, or picnics in the park? In the days when I was at college at the University of Notre Dame, the coaches tried to imagine what they would do in gym class if they were blind. Notre Dame did not teach bowling, an activity many believe the blind can perform effectively, and the coaches discovered that I was an accomplished swimmer, so they had nothing to teach me in that class. When they were testing all of us for our prowess in track and field, they decided I should not run the quarter mile. They didn't know how I would do it. Basketball, hockey, baseball, golf, football, and tennis were all out, according to the coaches. Eventually, we settled on ice skating and weightlifting for my activities in gym, and there was a great deal of doubt about the ice skating. The coaches weren't sure that blind people should be in gym class under any circumstances, and they would have been just as happy if I asked them to waive the requirement. They asked me repeatedly if I didn't want to skip the class, but I had come planning to participate fully in all college activities. Before the year had ended, I had learned to skate so well that newspaper reporters came to take pictures of me doing it. Professors in the academic classes lectured, sometimes employed diagrams, and occasionally handed out written material. Most people believed that I could participate fully in the academic world. I could ask about the written diagrams after class and learn what I needed to know. The one exception was math class. I was studying engineering calculus, and the professor operated almost entirely visually. He would stand before the blackboard and say, "First you," and he would write some symbols on the board. He would proceed by saying, "Then you," and write some more symbols on the board. I went to visit him in his office to ask for assistance in understanding what was happening in class. To my consternation, I discovered that he had a blackboard in his office. When I asked about the subject of engineering calculus, he stood before the blackboard with a piece of chalk in his hand and began to write. Eventually, I got myself a graduate student to tutor me in engineering calculus because my professor had no concept of explaining mathematical symbols or ideas out loud. My experience shows me that blind people do enjoy spectator sports, fashion shows, visits to museums, attendance at theaters, and picnics in the park. Sometimes it is essential to do a little advanced planning. Museums sometimes put their exhibits in glass cases, and I have come to think that if I ever encounter another glass case, it will be one too many. When I explored with members of my family the Museum of Natural History in Washington, D.C., I started counting the glass cases. When I got to 153, I started wondering how many square feet of glass each one had in it, and I estimated the weight of the glass in all of the cases I had touched that day. My mind refuses to be idle, and I needed some problem for it to tackle while I was standing by the 153rd glass case. Nevertheless, I have visited many museums in which I have been stimulated by the artifacts I have been able to examine. The wing of a fighter plane, the helmet from a spacesuit that has been to the moon and back, the furniture used at Mount Vernon, the statuesque figure of a woman performing a full arabesque dance movement. These I have examined in museums, and I have learned. Now, when I visit a museum, I call in advance to learn what there is that can come under my hands. I also try to learn how each artifact was acquired, who brought it to the museum, what story is associated with it before it was added to the collection, and how it was made. One of my favorite places to visit is the town of Williamsburg, Virginia. The manner of living of the mid-1700s is displayed in Williamsburg. A carriage wheel is held together by the iron tire that wraps around it. The tire is forged by a blacksmith to be smaller than the wheel. It is heated so that the iron expands and is fitted over the wheel. When the iron contracts, the snug pressure fit holds the pieces of the wheel together and keeps the tire in place. Before I visited Williamsburg, I thought a tire was made of rubber. I now know that a tire, the outer covering of a wheel, can also be made of iron. Recently, I was invited to attend the Kentucky Derby. This horse race occurs on the first Saturday of May each year. The first Kentucky Derby took place in 1875. The race lasts approximately 2 minutes. The fastest Kentucky Derby on record occurred in 1973 and lasted just slightly under 2 minutes. Secretariat was the horse that won that derby. My wife Patricia and I are both blind, so we speculated about what we would encounter in attending the race. Part of the commentary that comes with each derby day is lyrical writing about the beauty of the horses. We who cannot observe these magnificent creatures must gain our impressions of the race from other characteristics. We entered the track at Churchill Downs in Louisville, Kentucky, on a warm, sunny afternoon. Our box was a little above and about 20 to 30 feet back from the track itself. Warmed by the afternoon sun and cooled by the gentle breeze, we might have drowsed except that the excitement in the air was almost palpable. More than 150,000 people had gathered with us to observe what has been called the most exciting 2 minutes in sports. A melange of aromas, cigar smoke, perfumes of many descriptions, the scent of foodstuffs and beverages, and the smell of the track came to our nostrils and told their story. It was a day of excitement, of celebration, of hope, of anticipation. Each time the horses emerged from the starting gate for one of the events on the racing card, the crowd would begin to cheer, and the cheering reached its crescendo as the horses crossed the finish line. Between races, the sporting members of the assembly proceeded to the betting windows, some joyously to collect their winnings, but most grimly determined to do better next time. Shortly after 6 p.m., the horses for the Derby were brought onto the track. When the race began, the excitement that had filled the arena during the afternoon seemed as nothing compared with the clamor that rose from the multitude. The crowd was on its feet, and the favorite, reported to be the biggest horse in the race, was being urged to maximum effort. However, other horses seemed to be outperforming the biggest horse on the field. When the leader reached the finish line, there was confusion and a gasp of excitement. Could it be true? Was it possible? Apparently a long shot, a 50-to-1 horse, had won the Derby in slightly more than 2 minutes. Almost nobody could believe it. The reporters had not even mentioned the winner's name until the very last seconds of the race. Those in our box had put $2 on the horse just because the odds were so long. Our $2 brought us 100. The Kentucky Derby had been won by a horse whose jockey never expected to win. We marveled at the uncertainty of horse racing. We congratulated each other on our good fortune in betting the winner. We observed the disappointment of others and felt gratitude at having avoided it. Do blind people enjoy a picnic or a sporting event? Indeed, we do. We cannot observe the color of the grass or the sky or the bird that has flown overhead, but we can appreciate and share the scents, the sounds, the atmosphere, and sometimes the flavor of a tart lemonade. Then, too, is the ambiance, the feeling of a shared experience, the knowledge that others have been where we now are, the reality that for each event, there is a context, a framework, a history. We want to be part of the ambiance, a piece of the history. With your help, with your support of the programs of the National Federation of the Blind, increasingly, this is precisely what we are doing.